Welcome to the Chapter 49 podcast for April 26th, 2024. My name is Larry Lannon. I'm a communications volunteer with Chapter 49 and a retiree. Chapter 49, of course, represents most IRS employees in the state of Indiana. So thanks for spending some of your valuable time with us today. We're very glad you chose to join us, and we welcome back our chapter president, Duncan Giles.
Thanks, Larry. It's always good to be here.
So spring is here. It's always nice to see spring in most of the country. It's warming up a little bit in central Indiana after a little bit of a cold spell. But I want to talk about something that's been in the news lately. You know, this big package of overseas aid passed recently in the Congress. But there was another measure in that bill. People are calling it a ban on TikTok. Now, it's not exactly a ban. Some people will probably hear this and say, okay, what is TikTok? Well, TikTok is one of these video platforms, and it's kind of for shorter type of videos. Like on YouTube, you can put long videos on there. TikTok is more centered on shorter videos that you can play. The only time I've ever been on TikTok is when a family member links something they've posted. I never posted on it. I almost never get on TikTok, but it's very popular, particularly with the younger crowd. Well, now this legislation in Congress says the owner of TikTok, which is a company called ByteDance, B-Y-T-E, ByteDance, it's a Chinese-owned company. So what Congress said is, we don't feel comfortable with you Chinese owning this TikTok where you're maybe, who knows what, spreading misinformation we don't want out there, or disinformation, or we're, you know, are you collecting data on our young people? What are you doing with it? So for that reason, the Congress has told TikTok through this legislation, you have a certain, I think it's like 6 months, so many months, to either sell to United States based firm, or just go out of business in the United States. And this is not the only place where this sort of thing has happened. There are all kind of places around the world that have either banned TikTok and totally, or banned it on their government devices. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it true that if you have a United States federal government device, phone or any other kind of device, you're not allowed to get on TikTok? Is that right?
Yeah, TikTok would be blocked, among other things. You know, a lot of times Facebook is blocked, SoundCloud, things of that nature. So, you know, there are things, and I find it, you know, a little bit ironic that the Chinese government is upset about this, considering how many items that have come across on social media that they ban because they don't like the information coming out. And this is all, from what I understand, based on, like you said, what type of information are the Chinese getting on the folks who are posting on here? Not exactly the posts, because the posts are mostly innocuous, but the type of information and data they're able to get, because most, not all, but most of the Chinese businesses that are that large are tied in with the with either the party or the army in China. So there's a great deal of intelligence concern among the United States about this, and that's why they're looking at this.
Yeah, if you want a news site and you're in China, good luck finding it. You know, U.S. news outlets are pretty much not available at all in any of their technology. But some people have said, well, the young people of America are going to be all upset about this. Well, I would simply say this. When my daughters were young, they used MySpace. How long has it been since you've heard the words MySpace? Virtually nobody uses it anymore. My view is, if TikTok goes away, the young people will simply find another platform. I really don't think it's going to be a big deal, but thought it was in the news. And the fact that that has not been available and blacked out on most government, federal government technology, a lot of local governments have done that too. But I just thought the whole TikTok thing, which I've almost never... I very rarely ever watch it, and I've never posted on it, so maybe I won't ever get the chance if this thing all goes through. And I've been told that a sale of the of uh, of TikTok from the Chinese company to an American company would be extremely complicated because the Chinese technology experts have written the code. So if you're all upset about China collecting information or spewing out disinformation, that code may still be there. You can't just rewrite that code overnight or even in a few weeks. So we'll have to watch
that. And the one pertinent thing is I think we need to know is from MySpace, is Tom still our friend? That was always the first person on, Tom's my friend. Okay, is he still our friend even though MySpace is basically inert?
That's what came to mind was like, TikTok will go away. The young people will be upset. I said, well, maybe not. Maybe they'll just find something else to use. But let's get down to business, Duncan. We do have some serious things to talk about. And I think the most important one is a message we put on our Facebook page just recently. And this has to do with workload. Now, we know there are a lot of people in the service with workload issues, but probably up front and foremost would have to be amongst revenue officers, the people who go out in the field and do the collection work for the Internal Revenue Service. There is a new survey that's going to be happening, and we wanted to give people a heads up that it's going to happen and encourage revenue officers to participate in this survey. So talk about the survey, who's putting it on, and why it is important for IRS revenue officers to participate in this survey.
Yeah, this is something that came out of NTU National. And for those folks who don't know, Doreen Greenwald, before she became national president, she was national vice president. Before that, she was an advisor to the president. Before that, she was president of Chapter 1 in Wisconsin. Her day job was revenue officer. So this lady knows what goes on, how things work with revenue officers. And we all know, and it's been happening for way too many years, that there are several places out there that have overwhelming inventories. TAS is, leaps immediately to mind too. And we've done some things on this in the past. But for revenue officers, way too often we hear the stories of them giving what we call love time. Time before work, after work, on the weekends that they don't claim as credit hours, anything of that nature, so they can keep on top of their inventory because their inventory is just so large and so great. And, then if you get, other tax years that you have to take a look at as well, it just expands. You get almost like a shadow inventory as well. So what this survey is going to do is give us some cold, hard facts that we can take to IRS and basically say, look, here are where your issues are. This is why we need to reduce the inventory. Hiring more ROs is great. We love it, appreciate it. Needs to happen still nationwide, and I believe it will. But with that, there's always going to be too much work. There's always going to be too much work to collect, and we need to make sure that the folks who are doing the job as revenue officers do not have to work on their own time. They are getting paid for the work that they're doing, and I think the survey can help achieve that.
How do you think we got to where we are, where this is necessary? How do you think this happened? Did it sort of creep over years where more and more inventory, was coming in, the workload was getting bigger over time, or has this always been a problem?
It's gotten, you're correct. It's gotten worse over time. It used to be that the managers would have much more of a say in assigning the work. So they'd be able to have a queue and, be able to keep cases in the queue. Well, a lot of times now it's being spit out by the service center as being assigned. The managers will have less to do with it. They still have some. Have less to do with it, so it keeps getting more and more, and sometimes the grades that are on these cases, you might have newer folks working what's graded as a grade 9 case, but once you start digging in and getting into the issues on the collection, it may be a more complex case that's over their head, so it's going to take them more time to do. They're not able to do it very quickly, and that adds to the problem as well.
Well, I think it's important that the voices of these revenue officers be heard. And, you know, and I think this is one of those situations where you have to give credit where credit is due. You mentioned our national president, Doreen Greenwald, who comes from the collection part of IRS, and you have to give the service some credit for being willing to acknowledge that there could be a problem here.
The service is very good at acknowledging there could be problems in certain areas. The problem with that is they acknowledge it and then they really don't do anything about it. Or they say they can't do anything about it. We have certain deadlines we have to adhere to by the law. We have this over here. Well, you know, there's a human factor to that. And this all goes back to not only being able to recruit people, but retain them. If your workload is crushing, no matter what job, the position you're in, then you're not going to want to stay in that job. So we need to make sure that it's the workload is reasonable. Is it always going to be high for revenue officers? Sure, there's a lot of work out there to collect, but it needs to be reasonable. You have to have a reasonable inventory that you can keep on top of. And until we get to that point, and I think that's what this survey is trying to do, until we get to that point, you're going to have a real problem with fallout with either people retiring as soon as they can, finding other jobs within the service or other parts of the federal government, or if they're relatively new to the job saying, this just isn't worth it for this pay and I'm out of here.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yes, the service has historically been willing to acknowledge a problem. Doing something about it has always been that last step that has been difficult to do. So how will the revenue officers be notified of this? Will they receive an email and a link, or do we know how that is technically, procedurally going to work?
Yeah, basically this is going to be set up for all bargaining unit ROs should be getting a link with this survey. And then you can go ahead and take the survey. It's not going to be super extensive, very long, things of that nature. But this information is very, very, very important to National to be able to go. The more information that we have at National and to you to go to National IRS and say, you know, the Hank Keys of the world, the director of collection, field collection, and saying, here's, we did this survey. Here's where your issues are. And surveys, if they're done right, you know, can be tremendously effective. We've done surveys in the past locally where we've had problem areas and able to take the results to upper management and show them, you know, not only is it impacting this particular division, but it's impacting the entire post of duty. So, you know, this needs to be corrected. So the more information and data that we have to be able to show National IRS, the better off I think the ROs will end up being.
Interesting. You mentioned that it's not a lengthy survey. I think the survey, some of the surveys we've had in the past have been voluminous, but what you're hearing is this will not be. You know, Duncan, you've done some instructing as well, you know, internally. I remember as an internal instructor, particularly, I think it was the 1980s, maybe the 90s, I can't remember exactly. But we got some new people, outside contractors, to look at our training, and we would give surveys to the students when the class was over. Used to be a very nice, simple survey. Well, these new people came in and said, oh, we need to collect a lot more data. We had like a 4-5-page survey after the class was done on both sides of the paper. And so guess what happened? No, they didn't collect more data. People just stopped taking the survey altogether.
Yep.
So
yep.
You have to be careful how you do these surveys. So I'm glad to hear this is going to be of reasonable length. But I think the ROs will do whatever is necessary to express their views on their inventory, because that is such a key issue for them. And there are, and NTU is aware that there are other jobs, TAS, Taxpayer Advocate Service. There are other places in the service where inventory is a problem. Well, we're working on that as well. Just want to let people know, ROs are getting the attention now, but NTU continues to work on these other parts of the service where inventory is an issue. Let's move on. There's some change coming in what we used to call accounts management. Do they still call it that, or have we changed the name officially yet?
That was accounts management. It was this morning. Now, there could be an email right now sitting on my computer that's changed it, but as of right now, it's still accounts management.
So we'll say that for now, because I know there were some changes in names in the pipeline. But what we're seeing now is that there are a number of people who've been working telephones, taking telephone calls from the public, and that's what they did for a living. Well, now there has been a move to allow some of those people who are in accounts management, who have been specialists in taking the phone calls, to begin working paper inventory, which has just completely gotten out of control. There's so much of it and only so many people to work that. So the idea the service had is, well, let's take some of these telephone assisters and put them on accounts management section that deals with paper inventory. So sounded like a great idea, but NTEU had to file a national grievance over this. So tell us why the grievance was filed and what's behind this whole issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is one of those things where remote call sites have been asking for years, if not decades, to be able to work paper in the remote sites. Basically, something different than being just on phone work, a better mix for them, things of that nature. So the service finally said, okay, we've got the technology now. We can roll this information out to you, and we can have you do it. Well, they didn't talk about how they were going to do this with national NTEU, and that creates the problem, because nationals should always be notified of how it's going to be done and get a briefing on it, if we so desire, so we can talk about the impact and implementation of a particular change. And in this case, it's very important. We've already seen the training rolling out. And, you know, it's one of those things. We've been going through train the trainer, and now they're starting to train more CSRs, these folks who've been through train the trainer. People who've been around a long, long time and are very, very good at their jobs are not able to get certified on these paper changes now. They can't get, to the point where they're able to do it. And what I found after doing some digging, and I've let a whole bunch of people know this, it basically comes down to talking two different languages. Accounts management talks one way. Service centers talk another way. And they do not mix. If you don't have an idea of how accounts management handles things, you can't really translate that from the service center type work on adjustments to the accounts management. Now, years ago, back when you or I were on the phone, we would do adjustments. A lot of adjustments on certain areas. But we have not really done those for a lot of years. And that's what's causing the problem. And the way, from my understanding, from numerous sources, is that people are just not getting how they want to do this. The training has been rushed. I know this is going to surprise all the IRS folks out there that are listening. It's been rushed. They don't want to answer questions. And they're just basically skimming a lot of things. I know everyone is shocked, but try and hold it together. And so that's one of the reasons that NTU has filed this national grievance, because if this had come up at the beginning and they'd have said, okay, we're going to do a briefing on how we're going to do the training, this is what we're going to be doing, folks would have been able to say, well, that's great, but this is where you're going to have problems. You may need to tailor a different way. And because we didn't get that pre-decisional input to basically try and help the service, help the employees, it's becoming a big, big issue nationwide. And so that's where the national grievance is at. And hopefully we'll be able to get some answers soon and get some of this resolved. Because if you're giving training and even your best folks cannot get what's called certified, which means they're able to do this type of work, there's a big, big issue, and you're going to have to redo some things.
Okay, so the the grievance technically was over a lack of being able to bargain over these changes. The management took the position, well, we're not required to, so we won't. And NTU says, oh, yes, you are. And what prompted this, as I'm understanding your explanation, is this training class that came out and basically the training material talks in terms of how people at the service center, the campuses talk in doing their paper inventory. And just let's say the acronyms are different. The language is different. The approach is different. So that's why we're having, I won't say we, but how, why some people within the service are not able to get certified because they really don't have the background. So there's a gap there that appears to be going on. So it's good that NTE was working on this. And, you know, the public, this is really the public that's going to benefit from this because the more people that, you know, get certified to do this paper inventory, the more quickly that the public and the tax professional community, which uses paper correspondence quite often, you know, this is going to have an impact on all those folks. So we'll be watching this carefully, and hopefully this can be resolved. You know, Duncan, one of your favorite subjects is trying to figure out what happens with the space in the posts of duty. In other words, space for employees. You know, we've been talking about this whole thing about hoteling, where people share desks and only have a desk in the office a certain number of days throughout a week or a two-week period, pay period, for example. Well, you have talked about how there are inconsistencies in that, well, the service wants to reduce space and reduce costs. I mean, that's understandable. But then they're getting ready to hire a whole load of people. That's good. But where do you put them? Well, the service had for years had a policy saying, oh, if you're new, you cannot work telework for like, what, 2 years, something like that, depending on the job. Well, now the service seems to be completely backtracking on that, saying, oh, you want to work telework right after you're hired? That's okay. So, and the reason that we've seen this change and many others is because there's just not enough room to put people. And you've mentioned before that there's such an imbalance nationwide where you have some offices that are crowded and it's difficult to get people scheduled into these desks. Other places in the country where there's plenty of space, and it has a lot to do with when these contracts come up for leasing space. So tell us why you think this whole issue of space in IRS offices may be with us for a while.
Yeah, we've got several moving parts on this type of issue. The first is, in a lot of parts of the country, from my understanding, the folks from our facilities, FMSS, don't usually talk to the chapters beforehand like they are supposed to, and that gets into a lot of issues there. Here, I can say in Indy, we've always had a good relationship with FMSS, which I work hard to make sure we keep, so we do have that pre-decisional involvement. But the business, what happens is, what we're finding now is the business units sometimes are not even talking to facilities when they want to put folks in a particular post of duty. And because of the fact that over the past several years, we've been in a rent reduction phase. Okay, let's get smaller post of duties, give up space. If we're moving, look for smaller spaces. And it's just now, because we're hiring at such a great clip, even when you're talking about desk sharing / hoteling, you know, there's not enough desks for these folks to go in. And then you throw in the folks, Congress is a big proponent of this. Well, we need to get more folks back to the office because they're sitting at home not doing anything. And this causes several dents in my forehead as I bang it on my desk when I hear things like this. Because every study has shown that we've seen that folks are more productive at home. You know, there's less FMLA, there's less sick leave. People are not having to spend the money to go out to eat lunch. They're not having the commute time. they're, you know, so their quality of life is better. But, you know, they talk to me about, you know, business units have talked to me, well, we want to get people in there so they can talk and, you know, have a collective mindset and have these discussions. And I'm like, that hasn't happened for at least 15 years. So I don't know if you're going to get in Mr. Peabody's time machine and try and fix that. But aside from that, I don't know how it's going to work. So there's a whole bunch of things that are going on. And, you know, I was talking to an FMSS manager just earlier this week about a particular post of duty that is literally bursting at the seams, even with 3-to-1 or greater seating for in this particular post of duty. And because the business units keep hiring, we know that they're going to have to go out and look for more space. I mean, that's a given. But the problem is that's a 2-to-3-year process from start to finish. And these business units are going to continue to hire. What they need to do is take a look at where they have space and hire there. Unfortunately, they're saying, well, this is where our concentration is. This is where we need to hire. Well, what if there's no place to put them? Or it's not any place that anybody wants to go? You know, downtown Chicago can be really lovely to shop or visit or stay at a hotel, but not many people want to work in downtown Chicago. Okay, so we'll put them in the outlying PODs. You know, and as Lori McCann, the great president for Chapter 10, and I have had discussions, you know, if our PODs surrounding the Chicago area are full, where do these folks go? You know, you can't hire more. You know, we've got a post of duty in Indiana here that we'll be closing, and they continue to hire people into this post of duty. Even though I've talked to the different business unit leaders, FMSS has talked to them and said, don't put any more people in here. Well, they continue to do so. So until the communication gets better, it's going to be a long struggle for this.
Now, you realize, Duncan, you're forcing me to explain what Mr. Peabody's time machine is.
You know, if the youngsters have to look it up on the Google, that's okay.
Yeah, because
I'll say the Google.
You and I saw those cartoons as kids. I don't even know if they're around anymore. Yes, Mr. Peabody and his time machine. That was a little cartoon you used to see when we were kids. And I think they're long gone. If you might find them on YouTube. I don't know if you looked hard enough or somewhere on the internet. But, yeah, thanks for the update on that. We'll, as always, expect an update from you on how that's going. You mentioned posts of duty. PODs, some of them are smaller, some are larger. And there seems to be some confusion about what to do if you're having an issue in the building. Explain how an employee or even a manager, if they have a manager there, can report a problem if there's a problem in the building.
Yeah, what we found, the proper process to do this is if you've got a problem, an issue in a building, there's a water leak or, you know, electrical problem or just, you know, any sort of building maintenance issue. You need to do a ticket. And what people, especially in smaller postal duties, are doing are saying, hey, you know, I know our landlord or I know the landlord's rep real well. They come around, they ask what's going on, and we just tell them what's happening and they fix it. Well, the problem with that is twofold. The first is if they go ahead and fix it and then they bill the service for that, you've just done an unauthorized procurement. Because you're not authorized to have them fix it, even though it needs to be done. There's a process for that. So I don't want to get any employees or managers jammed up on that. The second one is if they do tickets, if we're in a post of duty that, let's say, is not as desirable because of the condition of the building, that sort of thing, we want to keep track of these tickets. Because once you, you know, go looking, if you need to expand the post of duty, so you need to go out and look, and the landlord says, well, we've got more space here. Well, we've got all these tickets that show that your building is not keeping up with the standards that we need. So it's extremely important not to go directly to a landlord or their rep when you're having an issue with a building, is do a ticket, let FMSS go through the process. Sometimes they have to get GSA involved, absolutely. But do the proper processes so we can keep track of those. One, so we can make sure to know what all the issues are with buildings. But two, so you don't do anything like an unauthorized procurement and get yourself potentially jammed up.
Man, I hate hearing that word, unauthorized procurement. Don't ever get involved with that, ever. That is a very, very ugly thing to deal with. As I saw a few of those as a union rep, you don't ever want to go down that road. Okay, Duncan, it's time to wrap things up. What's your final comment?
Earlier this week, it was Administrative Professionals Day. And I just want to give a shout-out to all those administrative professionals out there who are either listening or viewing this. You know, they're to me, and I've expressed this to commissioners on down, they're to me are the backbone of the organization. They keep things smoothly running. They allow people to do the jobs that they need to do directly to help the taxpayers. So, you know, we need to make sure that we have enough administrative professionals, and we need to treat them right, and they should be appreciated every day, not just one day out of the year. So I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you to all the administrative professionals for everything that you do. And I think I'm speaking for all employees when I say you are appreciated.
Oh, yeah, as an employee, I had the secretaries, administrative assistants, whatever they're called today, wonderful people giving support to those who were working. And I will say my last few years at the service, as a manager, I had the greatest secretary I could have ever asked for in Sally Ransom. And so, I was very fortunate to have great experiences as an employee and as a manager. She was the only secretary I ever had, and she was great. And appreciate her, even though I've been gone from the service since September of 2011. My final comment, Duncan, has to do with a news release that was put up by the NTEU right around the tax deadline. And NTEU, I think, very correctly was pointing out to the news media in general just what a tremendous gift to the Inflation Reduction Act was, not just to the service of the people working for the service, but what it's been for the public. Taxpayer assistance centers, which had been pretty well neglected, I managed one. You know, we've added, as a service, 54 taxpayer assistance centers through the Inflation Reduction Act. There's a total of 363. I don't think we added any in Indiana, but there are 54 added nationwide, 363 totally around the country. So it's much easier to find a place where you can walk in for help. Might want to get an appointment first, but, you know, at least there's a place where you can walk in and face-to-face talk to somebody. And then the other side of this, customer service representatives that work on the telephones, answering those phone lines, we have doubled the number of those customer service reps in the last 10 years, and wait times are way down year-round. IRS reported level of service for taxpayers who call the agency now, 85%. Now, you and I can remember when it was 20, 30, 40%, right? So, yeah. 85.
Just a year or two ago.
Yeah, I think it was 15% 2 years ago. They just, that news release cited that. So, it's not just making life better for the IRS and the people working at IRS. It has certainly improved our ability to do the work and provide service and do the other work, the tax administration work that the IRS is required to do. The public is definitely seeing this. So I wanted to point that out. And this Inflation Reduction Act, even though it's been reduced by $20 billion, is still there and is still making a difference in how the public deals with the service. Duncan, thank you very much for joining us. This is the Chapter 49 podcast. We try to make this a weekly podcast. We do the best we can, and we are around most weeks. I want to thank you for watching and listening. We also thank Duncan Giles for being around. Go to our Facebook page and see the most recent updates. In the meantime, please be safe and be kind.